Welcome to the Advocate Like a Mother podcast. We're here to empower and inspire you to use your voice. This is Andy. And on today's show, we have Valley Gideons. And Valley Gideons is the author of the children's book, Now Hear This, and writer at mybattlecall.com, and parent to two deaf teenagers. Valley spends her time writing about navigating through the fog of raising kids with cochlear implants and other things from the heart. We chat about her diagnosis story and experience as a hearing parent to deaf kids, the home dynamics of raising children with cochlear implants, and she offers me some advice on how to emotionally engage language as a parent to a child who is not deaf, but on a lifelong journey to overcoming her speech delay. Michelle and Ileana have taken the day off, so let's get right into our interview with Valley Gideons. Here we go. Valley, thank you so much for joining us today on Advocate Like a Mother. I'd love it if you could first share a little bit about your family and tell us kind of what are some of your favorite activities that you like to experience with them.
Okay, thanks. First, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here. My name is Valley Gideons. I am a writer and blogger at My Battle Call. I'm a military wife, which I feel like is kind of unique to our situation. And I have two kids, Battle 16, Harper 14, who were identified as having hearing loss at birth. And no family history, but that's kind of what put us on this path and this journey. So as a journalism major in college, and I wrote health and fitness and more human interest stories, my profession kind of pivoted into becoming an advocate and writer and support person for people with hearing loss.
You got to tell me how did you end up naming your son Battle? I mean, what a, that's a cool name.
Okay. It is a cool name. There are few stories. Do you want the truth or do you want the embellished version?
You know what? Let's go with the embellished version. Yeah. Okay. Indulge us.
Okay. Well, it all ties in. So my husband, like I said, he's a Marine. I don't think I said that, but he's in the military. He's a career Marine. He's a colonel now. And he grew up in the South and had a great family friend named Battle Wall. He played football for Carolina. And as a kid, he would sit in the stands and say, "That is the coolest name. Someday I'm going to name my son Battle." Okay. That's before, you know, he's a kid.
Yeah.
Fast forward to us dating and getting pregnant with our first son. And he said, "I want to name him Battle." I was like, "That is crazy. We cannot name our child Battle. First of all, you're a Marine. So that just sounds, you know, just weird." But, anyways, long story short, everybody just started to refer to him as Baby Battle in my belly. And so when people would find out we're having a son, I would say, they'd say, "Do you have a name?" As people do. And I would say, "Yeah, we're going to name him Battle." And they would give me the craziest looks, like, "What? Battle, like rattle, but with a B." And it was like, so I started dreading the question. So then we get the question and I said, "Well, Battle, it's a family name. It's a family name." "Oh my God, that's so cool. Yeah, great Uncle Battle. He fought in the Civil War." And they're like, "That is so cool." So from then on, we decided we would, instead of Battle Wall from Carolina, who we weren't related to, we would now have a great uncle who fought in the Civil War named Battle. And the irony is, be careful what you name your child because they might just live up to it. And he is so perfectly named that it's not even funny. Like,
yeah. So yeah, give me a little bit more context about your family. Where did you, where were you raised? Like, where are you from?
Well, I am actually a military brat. My father was in the Air Force. He flew the SR-71 spy plane.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. Oh, you know it?
Yeah, I am. Familiar. Yeah. I actually had like a model of it and I think a poster on my wall. I mean, like that's the spy plane. I was really into the spy planes as a kid. My uncle's in the Navy, and so he used to take us to all the air shows down here and stuff. So I'd seen, you know, those in real life at one point in time.
Yeah. So if you, I mean, it's old school now.
Yeah.
Because it's been retired for so long. But I mean, if you liked airplanes, then almost every person I tell who likes CSR says they had a model of it when they were a kid. So yeah. That's super cool. You can't see with the room I'm sitting in. I have like a whole area that's dedicated to my dad's stuff that I've stolen from my mom. Cause he died when he was 50.
Oh wow!
But, he retired the plane. We were living up in the Antelope Valley in Lancaster.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Beale Air Force Base up in Northern California. And then we came down near Edwards Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. And that's where he was able to finish his career flying there. And then I moved down to LA right out of high school.
Oh, wow.
And then once I married my Marine, we met in San Clemente and I married him and we've been all over the country, but always have come back and called San Clemente home. We got married here. We're now raising two soon to be high schoolers. And yeah. One high schooler here, and hopefully this is where we're gonna stay.
That's great. Well, so take me back to the birth. Tell me a little bit about the experience of getting the diagnosis for your kids, and because it's both of them, correct? That were mm-hmm. they both diagnosed at birth for having hearing loss?
Yeah. So my son, he's the firstborn, and he failed the infant hearing screening they do at birth. Mm-hmm. So you come back 2 weeks later for retesting. And at the time, so he's 16. So things have changed since he was born. And we were living in Cleveland, Ohio at the time, where they had just passed the mandatory screening. So we were really lucky to be living where we were living at the time. Mm-hmm. So we came back 2 weeks later, assuming it would just be fluid in his ear. This is pretty much what they used to tell people. It's probably just fluid. So we didn't really worry too much about it because we have no family history. There was no trauma during birth. You know, there was nothing that would have made us think that it be a hearing loss. So after the extensive test, which is excruciating, it's called an ABR, and that's where they hook the sensors up and mm-hmm. check the brain waves. Mm-hmm. They took us into the dark room that nobody wants to be invited into to mm-hmm. give us the results. The doctor walks in, says he failed. He'll probably go get hearing aids, maybe a cochlear implant, go to mainstream high school. Any questions?
And wow.
We were just in utter shock. Like, I don't remember much else that was said. And so after, needless to say, we went to a different clinic after that because we were like, we could not believe the way this lab coat just dropped this information on us. It was so crass. And I mean, he's a newborn and you're talking mm-hmm. about cochlear what? You know, we don't even know what that is.
Right.
And so that kind of set us down the path of having to learn all about what hearing loss was and then we did genetic testing. So we were able to identify, I don't know, we consider ourselves lucky, but it's not the case for a lot of people, what caused the hearing loss. Mm. And so that gave us an idea of what it meant, like what other things might come with it, which we're lucky there's not anything else that comes with this type of hearing loss. And then we were able to know that a sibling would have a 1 in 4 chance of wow. also having the syndrome. So for us, that was having all the more information was helpful, but most people don't ever find out
yeah.
the cause. So they're kind of left, you know, wondering.
Sure. So then going into Harper's birth and knowing you got this 1 out of 4 chance, you're finding this out then obviously after too, like with the initial infant test and in that same kind of path?
No, it didn't. Of course it didn't work out that way because nothing has ever gone the easy way for us. So she's 21 months younger. So while I was pregnant with her, we had decided we would just wait till birth to find out. And I literally, this is why I studied journalism. My brother, who is a geneticist before he became a vet, was like, you know, those odds are not good. He said this after the fact, because I really wholeheartedly, I don't know if I was in denial, but I believe she would be born hearing. I just thought, well, what are the odds? Well, the odds were 1 in 4. Like, the odds were she would also have hearing loss. But anyways, so while I was pregnant with her, my son was going in for his first cochlear implant surgery. So prepping for that surgery and then taking care of, you know, my prenatal stuff, we decided to go ahead and do the quad screening. She came back the day before my son's surgery with a high probability for Down syndrome.
Oh, wow.
So we went in for the, you know, more extensive ultrasound, and then we ended up deciding to do amniocentesis. Is that the right word?
Yeah, that's it.
But so we weren't going to do it. Then I decided we need to find out what we're dealing with so that when she's born, that we aren't having any surprises, and we would deal with whatever it was, but we did want to know. So then we ended up finding out that she did not have Down syndrome. So we got through that. And then because we had done the amnio, they could then test for the genetic, testing for the syndrome. Mm-hmm. And then after his surgery and whatnot, that we then got the news that she too had the syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally was in shock.
Yeah.
Which is so weird.
Yeah. You told yourself like, no, it's not going to happen. Yeah.
And I thought whatever happens, we'll deal with it. It's so cliche, but I grieved.
Mm-hmm.
I went through I don't know how long it was, because that whole time is a blur, but I mean, I was so sad for just the, you know, a window. But by the time she was born, it was great, because I was just already accepting and knew it was going to be okay. But I'm glad I didn't have to deal with that when she was born. You know, as an infant,
right,
with a toddler, post-surgical toddler, you know.
Right.
And I now look back and, you know, some of the blessings that have happened, that was one of them, that I was able to kind of come to terms and accept it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now this has plunged its way into your life, and at some point in time, you're inspired to write a book. You're a graduated journalist, and you got, did you write the book before you got into blogging, or was it the other way around?
No, actually my daughter and I just wrote the book. It's a children's book we wrote together.
Oh, okay. Right. I saw that. Yeah.
It's called Now Hear This, Harper Soars with Her Magic Ears. And we wrote it. It was published, it'll be a year ago this month.
Okay. Okay. And I think I saw either on the back of the book or somewhere on it, is it your husband's holding a hockey stick or someone's holding a hockey stick in an illustration that I saw?
Oh yeah. It's one. So in the book, we talk about our different friends that have different types of hearing losses and where different utilize different devices in language, in different forms of language communication.
Yeah.
And so those are our real friends.
Yeah.
And one, his name is Rylan, and he plays hockey.
Okay. Well, super. So then how did you get into the blog? Like what kind of inspired to start down that road and begin, you know, telling your story and sharing about, you know, what you were living through?
I think a memory just came up that I think I launched my official blog 4 years ago this month. And it's, I think the initial reason I first hit publish, I had written some essays, but they just sat in a WordPress, not published. And I went on a girls' trip with my two best friends from childhood. And they're still my ride and die besties. And they were saying to me, do you ever want to return to writing? Because my career path had kind of pivoted once having the babies and knowing they had special needs, which they don't like to call it that, but whatever, they were hard of hearing, and it was going to mean a whole different set of parenting challenges that we hadn't expected. So I had kind of put my pen away. And so my two besties were like, you really have a story to tell. And we, you know, kind of fleshed it out. Like, what are some of the reasons that I might want to hit publish?
Mm-hmm.
And I think I came home from that weekend and I published my first essay thinking, you know, only my mom and maybe, you know, my aunt might read it or whatnot. Mm-hmm. But from there, I got kind of dialed into this author writer circle and started learning about how to utilize social media for to get your word out, and then just started building this community. And then it just became so clear this was something that was useful and could serve. And it is the platform I wish had been there when our kids were little. I've created a place that I wish I could have gone to when my kids were little.
Right. I'm curious, and like, as someone who's still writing and you're living through this, what keeps you inspired then to keep on writing? You know, I mean, it's that extra effort to keep telling the story, and it's not exhaustive. As our kids keep growing, there's always new things to talk about, new things to share, new people to meet. But I'm curious where you continue to find your ongoing inspiration now.
I think part of why I first wrote part of our story just for myself is I didn't want to forget where we had come from, because we had gotten to a place where we had really kind of crossed into this new territory where the kids were really thriving, and we were starting to take that for granted. And we were starting to forget all the hard work that took to get from the beginning to where they were. I mean, I remember it clear as day, us just kind of not even celebrating that what was a big victory, kind of taking it for granted. So I wanted to write it more so I didn't forget. And then I realized the value in sharing our story, particularly from the early days and the struggles, so that people can see, look where we are now. And it's not without struggle, because every stage of life mm-hmm. is giving us a new set of struggles and challenges, which would be the true for every parent. But, you know, people look at my kids and they think, wow, you know, they play sports, they ski, they have friends, they're taking Chinese and writing books and, you know,
right.
But I want them to know that we had all the same challenges that you're going through, and that there's still hope. And I think you have to see it to believe it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we didn't really get as new parents, because there was not social media.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you think about it, Battle 16. So we didn't get to like see lots of examples of kids with hearing loss that were thriving. And my son's the first deaf person I ever met, so I hadn't been around it. And I think it just makes you feel less alone
mm-hmm.
to know there's other people going through it. Even though every story is different, we can see ourselves and others and then support one another. And like on my platforms, I do not tolerate coming at others with judgment or criticism, or it's like there's some people who feel very strong about the decisions they've made because there's no one way.
Yeah. I this is a perfect kind of moment for me to jump into this one question I had for you, kind of in the deaf community. Have you watched that movie Sound of Metal recently?
I haven't watched it yet. Okay, so it's on my list.
Yeah. I'm going to give away this little note because so we can dialogue about it, because it sounds like we're maybe kind of getting there. There is a point in the film in which, as an adult who had just recently lost his hearing, he ends up at a home so that he could now try to figure out like how to communicate, and there's other people there that are learning ASL and really kind of going through new ways to orient themselves around their hearing loss and their deafness. However, though, he's anxious to get out of that place, and he, you know, hears about the implants and is finding ways to get them, and there's a big tension around, you know, getting implants versus not getting them. And it seems like the approach in the home is very much like, you know, we don't go out looking for those things to solve our problems, because we're made this way and we're here to accept that. And by doing like by pursuing that, in more or less words, kind of speaks against like that kind of acceptance. I don't know. I'm curious on your thoughts on that, like as far as like, yeah, you know, with. Have you seen that in, and I didn't know if that was real. Like I was watching, I'm like, so is that true in the deaf community, that there are some who feel very much like, you know, well, getting the cochlear implants is like not necessarily a positive movement towards a solution versus like accepting, you know, deafness and then communicating without it. Help me understand like that reality if it is one.
Oh, goodness. There's a whole lot to unpack there.
Okay.
So without getting too deep into the weeds of it, mm-hmm. I'll start by saying you make the best choices for your family and your child with the information you have at the time. Technology and science is changing, as we all know, rapidly. Like Battle's 16 and he's on his fifth generation of cochlear implants.
Wow.
And it's only, it just think of it as an iPhone update. I mean, that's how fast it's happening. So insurance is needing to catch up. Everyone's needing to catch up with that. So that's one aspect of it, that technology is just evolving and changing. More kids are being identified younger. So the science is going more towards more things to give access to sound. Mm. That being said, though, what I've learned the farther down this road we've gone is that access to language is what's critical. And language can be visual, it can be using spoken, it can, you know, there's not one set of language. And so the more language, we say bathe your kid in language, the better. So you would not want to deprive a child of language because you think one is bad or not okay. Thirdly, there's so many Lees to this. It's different for a child to be born to hearing parents, right?
Yeah.
So that is a factor. And I wouldn't ever tell a hearing parent that should discourage them from exploring languages. But I mean, learning another language is not easy.
Right.
And especially when you have two babies. Part of it's survival. I'm so open to hearing other people's stories, and I love hearing what's worked for them. The deaf community, I respect deaf capital D, and that it's more than just choosing to use sign language. It's, you know, a culture, and I respect and support. There's beautiful people in that community, and I would love my kids to have access to that community. And also, it's very different experience for an adult to lose their hearing than to be born with hearing loss. My husband has a mild hearing loss from being in the Marine Corps all these years.
Yeah.
And then a really good friend of mine, he got a virus and has gone hard of hearing in his 30s. And I mean, so to listen to their perspectives, very different. Very different. And they have a lot more empathy for our kids, just mm-hmm. in the challenges of what it's like to navigate life being hard of hearing.
Yeah.
Allison Hertog, an attorney and former special ed teacher, is passionate about advocating for students with disabilities because she was once one herself. She was retained in the second grade because she couldn't read. She found out years later that the school psychologist did some testing and told her parents Allison would never go to college. How wrong they were. Allison understands at a deep level how easily schools can misunderstand and misserve students. Her struggle to overcome learning disabilities, as well as the blows to her confidence she took over and over again, shaped who she is today. Before becoming a lawyer, she earned a master's degree in special education and taught children with varying special needs. Allison's experiences as a special needs student and as a teacher make her a highly unique lawyer in the field of special education. She's won and settled every case she's filed. Allison fights for kids as if they were her own. This is not just a business for her, but a calling. California parents can sign up for a free consultation at makingschoolwork.com. You can also reach out to Allison directly via phone at 213-290-317. And now, back to our show.
I'm curious, what advice, do you give, to new parents who, get that diagnosis for their child, right away, especially if they're hearing parents and now you're faced with like all the things that come with having to learn new language and new ways of communicating. But what's kind of your approach to, kind of your firsthand advice when receiving that diagnosis?
That's a big question. First is taking time to digest the information that you've been given and then have time to process all the feelings that come with that. Now, not everybody's going to feel the same way, but there, it is pretty common to feel grief or anger or sadness or guilty or worry, stress, all the things, because you, particularly if you're being handed something you weren't expecting, it's just overwhelming. And so it's to know that that is part of it and to just give yourself time to process that, because I didn't, and I had to do it later. And I wish someone would have said to me what I just said to you. I felt embarrassed and shame. I felt shame that I felt grief. And so I just buried it. And because there's so much to do as well, to advocate, there's so much to get done. You know, I had two babies under two, both with the same condition that was going to need lots of intervention. So there wasn't a lot of time to sit around and feel sorry for anybody. But so I think it's just, it's okay. And it's okay. Find your trusted people. You can share how you're feeling. To at least find one or two, but as the more people you can surround yourself with that have empathy and compassion and understanding and are willing to help, and then ask specifically for what you need for help. Because I was also the, no, I got it. And I did not have it. And it, I did accept help from family, but I wish I would have asked more. Instead of acting like I just had it all together. And then surrounding yourself with a trusted group of experts in the field and get all the information, and then realize at the end of the day, you've got to make the decision that you feel is the best. And there's just not one way. I think it's great to talk to lots of different parents, but there's also a thing about being having over, like too much information, getting too many opinions, you know, access to too much is not always helpful. It's tricky. And then whatever decision you make, be willing to pivot and adapt and ebb flow, like, because we were never really stuck in our one way. We were, we kind of took a course, and then we knew that if this really wasn't working for our child, we'd be willing to, like, you know, reevaluate and make a change. And and so you've got to be able to, like, course correct if it's not going the way, because you don't know, each kid is so different. And so not feel, don't dig in on, well, we've decided we're this. This is the way we're going to do it. Be flexible. But you have to be flexible as a parent, period.
So my daughter has Down syndrome, but her largest delay is speech. So it's like, while I'm on the side of, you know, she can hear me fine. And cognitively, I mean, she responds, like, and she, like, I know what she's trying to tell me a lot of the time. But I'm looking for more tools for language, you know, with her, right? It's like, I'm kind of curious to hear from you, like, you know, advice you have for parents about emotionally posturing yourself as you're learning new language and you're learning, you know, kind of how to go through this process. Because for me, it's all very fresh, because she's, you know, she's seven. So she, you know, I, my 6-year-old, you know, the stuff he's been saying for the past, like, 3 years is, like, novel. You know, I mean, he's super smart, and he's got incredible articulation beyond his peers. So it's like, then I have, you know, my daughter, who in my mind, I'm like, I know that she has all the same thoughts this boy does, and just doesn't, and is incapable of, because of her low muscle tone, to get, you know, those words, you know, out to me. But I do find myself honestly struggling as a parent, I think, you know, to find the patience, to find the energy and the inroads to really put myself in a position to really help her as best as I possibly can, so she can find the language that she needs, you know, as she continues to develop her way of, you know, of speaking, you know, over time. But I don't know. I mean, what advice would you give me as someone who's saying like, hey, like I'm you know, this is something we're going through and it's hard, right? And like it is like it does very much feel like it's not like suddenly she's going to be able to speak. It's like, no, this is just a journey, you know?
And yeah. So when our kids were developing speech, it was even a babble sound was celebrated. Like a ba 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 ba. That's my son's, you know, his number one babble was abba, abba, abba. Like we'd say a ball, yay, you want a ball. And then he would feel like acknowledged, even though he might not have been, he'd point to anything round, abba, abba. Mm-hmm. So that was language because it was, you know, it's so about teaching kids that communication is a back and a forth, that they use their sign or their words, and then the person acknowledges and then responds, and even learning some basic signs together might be a really meaningful experience.
Yeah. We've done a little bit like it through, she's got a number of different like signs. And so it's all of that is kind of in play, and I want to be giving this more time. You know, I want to be able to like, you know, kind of spend. Yeah. And I think what I'm hearing you say too, and you kind of said it before, is just like finding a place to process it well, you know, at, you know, learning patience and, you know, just giving yourself, you know, probably grace and room for that journey. And, right. And, you know, trying to maybe try to avoid as much, you know, self-shame as possible.
Oh, we're so good at it, right? Shaming and then, comparison and, again, that's why I tell it's why I haven't really been able to get like a sponsorship from like an implant company or because I tell the truth. Mm. And I tell about the hard parts too. Our story isn't just wrapped up in a pretty bow. And a lot of, you know, the stuff that comes out is all the positive.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, cochlear implants are not a cure.
Right.
If you're going to do the cochlear implant route, it's a lot of work. I mean, it was my full-time job helping my kids have access to sound and language. Like it was a full-time job. And it just became a parenting style, but it was not easy. And keeping those things on their devices on their heads. I mean, that's one of the number one questions I always get is how did you keep them on?
Oh yeah.
And now, you know, and that's, I always take it from, okay, there's caps and straps and headbands and, you know, this and that and the others. There's all these like literal ways to keep them on. But for me, it's always about the more, not how to keep them on, but why they should keep them on. And right. That's going to be through continuity and consistency that eventually the light bulb's going to go off in their little minds that these actually create access to sound and they're pleasurable. But that's going to take time and consistency. And there were many times I was over it.
Yeah.
And so I've even told parents like, we would take hearing aid timeouts. Because when my daughter was an infant and she had infant hearing aids, I mean, imagine putting hearing aids on a 6-week old.
Yeah.
Who got very good fine motor skills. We talk about it in the book. She developed fine motor skills really young, which most parents would be, oh, her fine motor skills. No, we were not happy because she could grab her ears and she would take her hearing aids out and she'd put them in her mouth.
Oh no.
A choke. So your baby is wearing a choking hazard. So I couldn't take my eyes off her. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of hard when you have a toddler who also has devices on and you're just trying to, you know, maybe cook, maybe clean, maybe, I don't know.
Try
to have a cup of coffee.
Walk down the sidewalk.
Yeah, we're living remote, so we're not around family. And so I would put her up in her little bouncy seat up on the counter when I was cooking dinner. And after the third or fourth time she'd take her hearing aid out and put it in her mouth, I would take her hearing aids out and put them on the counter and say, okay, I am taking a hearing aid timeout.
Yeah.
So that I don't have to watch her for like 20 minutes.
Sure.
And then I'd start to feel guilty. And I had to get over that. because I wanted her to hear everything. Because, you know, don't you want to hear me talking about what I'm cooking? And I mean, I must have been so annoying because we just never quit narrating. You know, it was like you wanted to narrate life for them, to just bathe them in this language, which, and now they never shut up. And we created them this way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when we're driving in the car and they're both just going on and on, and I'm like, will you shut up? And I'm like, yeah, we made you this way. So no, you're never going to shut up. It's a blessing and a curse.
Oh, goodness. Well, yeah. Well, I will say that, you know, we need the truth tellers in that way in the world, you know, that tell it like it is, that keep it real. My wife is the same way on her podcast, and she's the one who's just like, nope, I'm cutting half their therapy. Like, you know, it's too much. I can't drive that much. You know, we're just, they need more time with each other, and, you know, less time with, you know, adults that are showing them something, and more time with kids that they know. And so, yeah. That's great. And I got one last question here to kind of hear a little bit more just about your current state for support. You've moved around a lot, you know, you've mentioned as a Marine family, and I'm curious, you know, what does community look like for you, you know, now? Like, did it, you know, has that been difficult because of all the travel that you've done? And who's in your corner? Who's checking in on you and keeping it real with you? Like, who are you finding support from these days?
Oh, boy. You asked the good questions. These are like, well, again, every stage of our journey has been different, and every place we've lived has been a different set of people. One thing I have become really good at is wherever we end up, even if I'm there begrudgingly and like complaining and, you know, pouting about it, I end up finding a small circle because there's good people everywhere. I've always gravitated to the people who love my kids no matter what. Like, they see that it's challenging and they acknowledge, wow, that must be hard. But then they just accept them like any other kid, especially when they were little. And it was, you know, it was so hard when they were little. So those were my people, the people who just didn't minimize it, but then just treated our kids like any other kid. And my mom is probably been my biggest supporter because she grieved with me. And I just appreciated that so much that she didn't try to make me feel like I should just buck up and just get over it. She worried, would my kids be okay? And she knew it was gonna be a lot, you know, she knew it would be a lot for us. And when my kids went through very difficult stages, she still loved them and was so patient with them. And she's their, one of their biggest cheerleaders. All their grandparents are. They have good grandparents. But yeah, so I always had my mom in our corner. I still do to this day. Anything that good that happens with the kids, I say, text grandma.
Yeah.
Because they know she'll just be stoked, right? And my husband and I, over the years, again, it's, you know, as you know, doing this podcast, being partners in this is challenging. And we have to keep reminding ourselves we're on the same team, because it can destroy relationships.
Yeah.
You know, just, we're both fighting for the same thing. And so once in a while we have to sit back, and we're hardly ever on the same page. Like, one of us is like celebrating all the accomplishments while the other one's pointing out all the things that still need to work. And so sometimes it's just like, can we just celebrate this moment? You know, we both do it. So let's get on the same page and let's just acknowledge this is a good moment. Mm-hmm. Like, we got good kids. They're happy kids. They're going to do good things.
Well, that's amazing. Everything that you've said is so intriguing, and I appreciate your levity and your reality, and just like, you know, I've enjoyed the pace of this conversation. It just feels like I'm hanging out with a new friend who's, you know, got great wisdom and advice, and that's really immersed herself in really what this experience has been in a real way. So, you know, thanks for not overselling me on what's inspiring, but just being honest enough to just share like what's hard and what's real. And you know, where you kind of mentioned at the beginning, but if you could again, where can our listeners follow and support you on your journey?
Thank you. Yeah, I would love for them to join us. I am at mybattlecall.com is my website, and you can find books and resources there. And my writing sits on that page. And then on Instagram and Facebook, same name, My Battle Call. And you don't have to be an old fart to come to Facebook, people. We have fun over there too. And then our book is Now Hear This, Harper Soars with Her Magic Ears. And you can find that on Amazon.
Awesome. Well, yeah. And if you're not a part of our Facebook group already, we have a group under the Advocate Like a Mother page. So if you're not there already, come join us. And then all of you can come and interact with Valley and glean from all of her experience and wisdom. So thank you again so much. This was a great conversation. Have a great, great afternoon. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks again for listening. As always, if you could leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, we'd appreciate it, and share this episode with a friend. Access resources, episode notes, podcast merch, and more at www.advocatelikeamother.org. And if you're a company looking to partner with us via sponsorship, please reach out to us on our website. And lastly, follow us on Instagram at advocatelikeamother and join our community group on Facebook. Friends, we'll see you next time.